Speak. I...
Well, Kate Larson and I just chatting as I hit the record button. We had so much to talk about, but welcome, Kate, to Fremantle Shipping News. And congratulations on the launch of Public Open Space.
Thanks so much. I'm completely thrilled to be here and talking about this book, as I just said, that still feels like a dream come true.
Well, it's a lovely set of poems, and it's got a really interesting structure to it. I sat down, and unusually for a book of poetry, I read it from the beginning to the end, and I felt as though I went on some sort of journey. And I enjoyed very much your opening, like a preface, an introduction, an essay, really, about what you're doing. And we'll talk more about what you have done, but there were some things that immediately caught my attention, Kate, as I started to read it. And on page 20, you say, it was helpful to think about placelessness from within an unstructured international residency to articulate my discomfort and adjustment and my increasing affinity with post-passport and net artist scenes, to think about identity and empathy from a place where people felt their identity was being threatened, to consider digital and online technologies at the moment when the loophole that gives Hong Kongers access to it seemed to be starting to close. We'll come back to Hong Kong and that experience and some of the poems from that time. But this concept of placelessness, post-passport, etc., that's the bit that really caught me, because I used to think I was a citizen of the world many, many years ago, probably when I was about 20. So that's about 50-odd years ago. And these days, that concept has almost vanished when you think about the strife in the world and the border controls and within people's own countries. So is it a dream, placelessness?
I think you're exactly right. I think it's a space that's changed a lot more rapidly. Obviously, it's always, the world is always changing, but we've seen that pace of change increase exponentially over these last few years. And the idea of travel, of just that freedom to be able to pick up and move without having to worry about the implications of whether that's possible or what it means when you get there, I think the ease of that has certainly gone. You know, I don't think young people doing gap years, for example, coming out of school, have the same freedom that I did just one generation ago. And I think that coupled with the fact that the pandemic times also moved so many more of us into the online space, connecting us with a global community and creating communities that aren't as connected to physical geography. So I think we're all kind of now operating more consciously in that place-based, but also more place-based, but also more placeless at the same time.
Well, the internet has certainly placelessness, I suppose. We can float in the ether. I'm looking at public open space and noting that you're a well-known social media poet, and that your alter ego, Katie Keys, aka at Tiny Little Poems, wrote and posted a daily poem for over a decade. Now, I think that Instagram page is still functioning, or is it not?
Oh yes, so they're all out there. So I started on text-only platforms like Twitter as a way of keeping myself accountable for trying to get writing back into my everyday. The thing I was best at writing was my excuses for why I wasn't writing. And I got sick of hearing myself make those excuses. So I set myself a daily deadline to write and post a social media poem every day. And I did that for more than a decade, and some days would post hundreds of poems, but I did at least an average of one poem a day. So I joke that gave me a very large body of very small work. I don't recommend that anybody scrolls back through 10 years because certainly in the beginning they were not finely honed pieces of craft. But it did open up an extraordinary world of opportunities and world of online creative communities for me, which I'm still very passionate about.
The Instagram page for Tiny Little Poems, assuming this is yours, and there aren't too many others, it says personal blog, original poems by yours truly, broken hearts, dark days, bad thoughts, love, my pain guides my hand and turns the sadness and anger into words. Is that it?
Oh, no, I think that's somebody else.
So that's all of mine. I thought
so all of mine have now been migrated. So it's Tiny Little Poems on Twitter originally. But all of mine, you can find me online at Kate Larson Keys, all one word.
That's where to find it. So the concept of Tiny Little Poems, though, is a very interesting one. How short, abbreviated did they get?
Well, last night I had my book launch here, and I'm currently in Naarm in Melbourne, and I closed the reading with one of the tiny little poems from the book, which is "You are out of memory, remember me, forget." So that's an 8-word poem that's presented in the form of a computer error message. So obviously the book is what I hope to put right in the intersection of digital and poetic culture. So it brings poetry into that digital space and draws inspiration from hashtags and error messages and all sorts of fun digital digital ideas, and sees how we can make poems out of it. But yeah, so that's an example of an 8-word poem. There are also a couple of poems in the book that are just their titles followed by a blank page, which were fun to play with as well.
Well, I thought they were nicely located. You get about the middle of the book, and there's a section open/closed, and then the next page, the title, if that's the right way, or the substantive poem, is "No Admission Beyond This Point." And then there's a new line, square brackets, blank space, close square bracket. And it really is interesting. And as you indicated, there's quite a bit of that. And then there's the one that I have to get you to explain to me, because I couldn't sit and work it out, didn't have the time, and maybe never get there. And that's the one called Binary.
Ah, yes.
Tell me about Binary.
So Binary is a poem that's bilingual. So it's a short three-stanza poem that's represented in English, and then each of those English stanzas has been translated into binary computer code. So it's just repeating the stanza, the English stanza, as if it was entered into computer language. So it's a visual poem. It's not one that I'm ever going to read in public because it contains a lot of 110011s. But as a visual representation of the fact that we are communicating bilingually, even when we're working on our laptops and our phones and devices.
And explain to me how you found yourself in that particular, can we call it a genre?
I guess going through, I've always loved poetry, but I had to wait until I was a full grown up. I was of the generation, I remember the first computer in my primary school. I didn't get onto the internet until I'd nearly finished my schooling. So I remember the time before and the time since. So it wasn't until I was a full grown up that I really discovered the coming together of poetry and technology. And for me, that was through the social media lens, though there's a whole world of digital poetry out there. And one of the many things I love about that is that it makes poetry, which I think sometimes has bad PR, accessible to a whole world of non-traditional poetry readers and writers who can either purposefully or accidentally come across poetic interventions, poetic moments within their social media feeds, within their digital scrolling. And there's this incredible creative, supportive community of people liking and sharing and commenting and just kind of absorbing poetry into their everyday, particularly by people who may never dream of walking into a bookshop and buying a physical poetry book. So I think, you know, I got into the digital poetry space for very practical, trying to leverage a writing habit into my everyday, and have become a digital poetry evangelist.
I love that. This poetry book, Public Open Space, is then divided broadly into, as I said, three sections, one headed public / private, the next one open / closed, and then the last space / lessness, space lessness. Can you explain to our listeners and the readers of this what that sort of subdivision of the poems is doing?
Yeah, so the overarching themes of all three sections are about control of physical and digital spaces. So from the kind of innocuous how we're controlled by traffic or wayfinding signage, to the very explicit controls of laws and restrictions on human rights. And the three sections represented three different ways of thinking about that, I guess. So public and private, the poems in that section are in the main inspired by issues of surveillance and oversight and how they infringe upon us. Open and closed are inspired in the main by issues of access and when that access is restricted, and then how we push back against those restrictions. And as you mentioned earlier, the idea of placeness is really starting to explore this as yet unreconciled, I think, digital identity. With so many of us now, certainly I'm an example of this case in that my creative and professional and personal lives all predominantly take place online or are mediated by digital means, far-flung family, far-flung client work. I run my own consultancy business, so my work is all through digital means. And of course, my creative practice is online as well. So, and I think many more of us are existing in that netizen space, the resident of the internet. And that obviously creates ironies kind of at best and conflicts at worst. But when we have more freedoms online that we do in our physical spaces, or where those online spaces are restricted and controlled as well.
The first part, am I right in thinking, owes a lot to the free speech concepts and also to the challenges that what you started to experience in Hong Kong when you had your residence there produced. There is, for example, the poem Civil / Disobedient, and the opening quote is from Timothy O'Leary, not to be confused with Timothy Leary. The disobedience in Hong Kong was very civil indeed. And as you read that, your hands are tied, your hands are bound. Will you bite or loose your tongue or lose your tongue, and it goes on and makes one feel very and comfortable. But the first poem in the book, which is titled Named, we were silent, though we were told, sorry, though we were not told to be silent. We gave them our names, though we were surprised when they called. One by one, we waited to be called. And it's for me one of those dark movies in black and white, and you're not sure quite what's happening, but I feel uncomfortable from the very beginning. I feel a sense of what's happening, and the title to it, Named. I mean, one way to, you can name and shame people, you can attack people by naming them. And free speech is a wondrous but also a frightening thing.
Absolutely.
What is the Named poem doing?
Well, I think you've really, I mean, the wonderful thing about any form of poetry or writing or any creative endeavor is its ability to be interpreted. So what it means for one person might be something else. But for me, the motivation was very similar to what you just outlined. So as you've referred to, I was in residency in Hong Kong in 2018, which was an extraordinary privilege. And although this is not a book about Hong Kong, it's not my place as a white Australian to write of or about that city. That experience taught me a lot and provided a lot of inspiration for how I could reflect what I was experiencing in that very particular city in that very particular moment, which was kind of in the tense lull between two significant human rights protests, how I could apply that back to my own lived experience of feminism and oppression and protest and so on. So the Named poem was one that came out of that Singapore context. And yes, it's deliberately kind of quietly menacing, based on that idea that so many people are put in situations where being controlled is out of their control. You know, that kind of inevitability of knowing that something bad is going to happen, you know, and there are so many different situations that applies to. So I think it's that, yes, that quiet menacing of fear, I guess, impending fear.
Kate, that concept of free speech, I think I have the strong sense that you strongly adhere to it. Is it under threat in our community?
I think it's the whole concept of free speech has become very complex and confused in contemporary society. Certainly here in Australia, we don't actually have a right for free speech, as we know. We don't have a legislative right to free speech. What we do have is legislative protections against hate speech. But, you know, that has in part become confused because of the rhetoric from other countries. I think we're seeing at the moment a real rise in the increase of hate and or hurtful speech. The internet is an extraordinary force for good. It's seen, an incredible increase in formerly marginalized and silenced communities being able to tell their own truth. It's been, you know, people who didn't write the history books being able to give genuine lived accounts. And we've seen a real increase in the appetite for first person lived experience. So people telling their own stories rather than having their stories told for them. So it's extraordinary. It's life-changing, life-saving in many cases. Unfortunately, the same technology can be used as a weapon and is being used as a weapon. Just look at the example of the Twitter platform, for example, which has gone from being that a safe space for many communities to being not just an unsafe space for the people within it, but also is being wielded in an unsafe way by the people who now own and run it. So I do think that the tools that help us can also hurt us. And we're all still learning what that means in this globally connected world. The technology is kind of evolving faster than society's ability to learn the skills, I think. So we're all playing catch up.
Kate, you're also an arts and cultural.
I've got to be hopeful. Mm.
Yes. Mm. I'm just wondering how you fit your writing in amongst being an arts and cultural consultant. How do you organize yourself?
Well, in the past, not very effectively. So writing that poem a day was really the start of me starting to prioritize my own creative practice rather than just helping other people make their creative dreams come true. So this year has in particular been based on a decision of making that happen by just saying, learning how to say no to more things in order to be able to do the thing that brings me joy, which is this writing journey.
It's lovely, isn't it? Now, tell me, I imagine the answer is everybody and anybody who likes to read or likes to read poetry, but who would you like to know was reading your book of poems?
I'm really hoping, I mean, obviously, I've been really gratified that, writers and poets that I respect are reading the book. But I'm really hoping people who haven't maybe got a poetry book in their collection might give it a go. I mean, there are some really different, very different forms of poems than certainly the ones I was taught in school. There's some very short, micro poems. They are meme-based, so picture-based poems, poems full of hashtags, poems full of computer references. So I'm hoping that those non-traditional poetry audiences will also, find a way in, and it could be a gateway drug for hardcore poetry down the line.
I can see it. I'm looking at the poem cannot/can, and I think of my son who reads history and to some extent biography voraciously, but probably doesn't read a lot of poems. So I'm going to put that in front of him. you've got four cannots, you've got three cans, and you've got different, what do we call it?
Punctuation.
Punctuation after each of them. And it just makes you stop and say to yourself, what is that? What is that exclamation? What is that statement? What does that mean? But it works. It's great.
Yeah, well, thank you. And it's, a little, there are some really serious topics in this collection. There's some very heavy things that were quite difficult to write. And there are some fun ones, but again, still referring to the same kind of coercive themes. So using two words and a bunch of punctuation, and I think two stanzas, you go through a process of somebody being convinced to change or convinced to move an opinion. Yes, but in a, I hope, a fun way. A little bit of light relief with punctuation.
It does, and that's why I found it so lovely as I read through it. I was given something in a sense, or at least I interpreted it as being light, and then I moved to something else. But what about you? For whatever reason, whatever the reasons might be, do you have a favourite poem amongst all of these?
Oh, I think for me, that's a very hard question, Michael.
Because you love all of your children. But
yeah, love all of the children. I think one of the ones, the series that makes me smile is the error message poems, so the meme poems based on the pop-up error screens that appear on our computers. One of the lovely humorous moments that you won't know from reading the book was that I originally designed them as MS-DOS error messages. Remember back in the day when the They would fill your screen in cascading messages, but we had to change them to more up-to-date technology because we didn't. The publishers weren't sure that the youth of today would understand the very dated reference, which is sweet.
Well, it did remind me, I think, in the early introductory parts of turning on your modem and all the wonderful sounds. And that is something that I really miss. You got yourself prepared for some experience. Mm.
It's true. Well, it's that difference. You can remember, like, even the concept of logging on, not just the sound, but the concept of logging on, is kind of alien now because we're always on, you know, something in our houses. And obviously this isn't universal, but for the majority of Australians, we are always on in some way. We don't disconnect from the internet, so you don't have to reconnect to the internet with all of the musical preludes that used to include.
Well, the very last poem in the book meets what you were just describing about those amongst your favourites, in square brackets. The system needs to be shut down, and then you go to the signage. This system needs to be shut down. And then there's what looks like a Molotov cocktail-type bomb on the left. And then there are three options: restart, shut it down, watch it burn. I think one way or the other, your book of poems, Public Open Space, is going to, in a sense, produce all of those responses, you know, in a creative way.
Yeah.
So congrats.
We know, and thank you so much. So it's very exciting.
Kate, and just look forward to sitting down and reading it again, having spoken to you about it.
Oh, it's been a joy to speak to you. Thanks so much, Michael.